All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, and I'm just here to introduce the guest host for today's program. Our host is Dr. Eric Fretz, and Dr. Fretz is a graduate of the University of Michigan and faculty lecturer at the University of Michigan, and he teaches classes all across the campus, including psychology, innovative blue entrepreneurship, School of Education, College of Engineering, Center for Entrepreneurship. Can you tell he likes entrepreneurship? Well, he is here. Dr. Fretz retired from the United States Navy after 20 years and three deployments to the Persian Gulf. His topic today is the Journal of Veteran Studies. Finally, many colleges and universities across the country and around the world are adding veteran study courses to their curriculums. But first, I need to thank our sponsors before we get into the program. I want to mention our loyal sponsors, including Legal Help for Veterans, specializing in veterans' disability claims. Call Legal Help for Veterans at 800-693-4800. The National Veterans Business Development Council, better known as NVBDC, the nation's leading third-party authority for certification of veteran-owned businesses. For more information, go to their website, nvbdc.org. The Eisenhower Center, located in Michigan and Florida, specializes in the treatment for veterans, first responders, and athletes, anyone suffering from post-traumatic stress, TBI, or a closed head injury. For more information about the Eisenhower Center, you can go to eisenhowercenter.com or give them a call at 800-554-5543. And finally, the Charles S. Kettles VA Medical Center in Ann Arbor, Michigan, what we think is the finest VA medical healthcare system in our whole program out there of VA medical centers. To learn more about these organizations and their services, as well as how you can support Veterans Radio, go to our website, veteransradio.net/our sponsors. All right, so we want you to sit back and enjoy today's program. Dr. Fretz has got a number of people that are participating with the Journal of Veterans Studies. So sit back and enjoy today's program.
All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Hello, everybody. I'm your host, Eric Fretz, and welcome to the next edition of Veterans Radio. Today, we're going to have an awesome conversation with a good friend of mine, Brianna Grahowski, and she is going to talk to us about two great things. One is the Journal of Veteran Studies, and the other is just the concept of this Veteran Studies community. I think there's a lot of wonderful stuff going on out there, and when we're done today, you're going to be really smart about it. So I'd like to welcome you, Brianna. I think it's wonderful. I've known each other for several years now, and I know that you started way back in December of 2015 when you were working at the Indiana University Southeast and also Mass Maritime, and you were really studying how folks are doing writing and became fascinated with the veterans that were in your class and how that was sort of unique. And that led to, I think, some real interest in how veterans are sort of different in terms of how they approach their writing. And there were others that were interested in some Virginia Tech folks that were interested in veterans and the things that they were doing. And that led, I think, to an idea of, hey, we could have a sort of a centralized resource for a research on this topic. And so you've since then moved on as editor. You're editing the journal. You moved on. You do some independent scholar stuff that I know that you're doing with a couple of other universities. But editing this journal has obviously become a very much a full-time job. And so I'd like to just talk to you a little bit about that. And maybe you could share a little bit about the genesis of the journal. And then we could talk a little bit about some of your favorite things that you've seen over the years that we've published. Take it away.
Well, thanks for having me. Yes, it's quite the privilege to be here. So I'm not a veteran. I would not last a day in the military. I grew up without sort of routine and structure. But my dad is a veteran. My dad was drafted into Vietnam and served there and, came home, not wanting to talk about it and sort of poignantly mentioning to me that I will not be defined by my military service. And so I grew up thinking like, okay, so being a veteran maybe is a bad thing. Or at least in his mind for a period of time, it wasn't something he was very proud of. And I was always quite curious about that. Fast forward to many years later, I my friends were starting to go to the military after high school. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, but I had a couple of really good friends. One went to the Air Force and one to the Marine Corps, and was very like, just opened my eyes to this different, again, counter what my parents had told me. In my town, they were protesting the Iraq War. And so all of this was sort of really like culminating in my mind and just genuine curiosity. And yeah, I went to school to get a degree in rhetoric and composition because I'm very passionate about how people make meaning or how people process things and interpret things. And sort of my brain thinks best with writing and communication. In studying that field, I became interested particularly in women in the military and wanting to know their stories and how they sort of made meaning of their service. So my dissertation was looking at two disabled women veterans and how they make meaning and process their military service. One does that through art, and one does that through social media and virtual intelligence and sort of different technologies. And so that is sort of where that all sort of came from, is this very strong interest. I will say that it was very good timing, all of this. And I'm very much a person who is aware of her contextual chaotic situation of where she is and what's happening in history. The drawdown of the Iraq War was happening, and this was very much being talked about. And so that was more of an impetus. In my field, we were scrambling, quote unquote, as well as many parts of higher education were scrambling, that's the word, to prepare and understand how to accommodate student veterans coming into college.
Yeah, manage this influx of veterans, because the veterans had always been coming to college, but they hadn't. They hadn't been coming from combat.
That's right. Thank you. That's right. Thank you. Exactly. Yeah. You know, not since World War II or something had we had this sort of influx of combat veterans or individuals with deployments coming into the classroom at such a high rate, That was being discussed. And so from there, I met contacts and colleagues across the country doing research with student veterans in the composition classroom. At the same time, I met people like Travis Martin, who is out of Eastern Kentucky University.
Great program,
who is the first person I ever heard use the term veteran studies. We can talk about that program and his great work. But I'm mentioning all of this to say there was a community, a culture being formed of, you know, researching veterans, understanding the veteran transition process, understanding military families. This is something that is worth academic pursuit. I mean, many people have been doing it for many, many years, but in terms of really making a concentrated effort to bring us all together, sort of, and use our collective wisdom and knowledge, it was really happening 2013 and to the present. Met some people at Virginia Tech. They have a conference Veterans in Society. Yes, they have the Veterans in Society conference. And they started that, I think, in 2013.
Yep.
From those conversations, going to those conferences, meeting with these people, it was very clear that a venue for publishing research was necessary and needed. Mm-hmm. And I was a junior scholar, for lack of a better way of saying it. And I was like, well, I've got the energy and I've got nothing to lose. I'm gonna try to do this. I'll also mention that I've had experience in the academic editorial world. So sure. I, as a master's student, I worked on an academic journal, and I saw a fellow graduate student running this journal and doing the work on basically on his own. And so I knew it wasn't impossible. I knew the platform he was using. I knew sort of how to run a journal. Mm-hmm. I finally got the courage to push it through in about 2015. We established
December 2015, the first call goes out.
That's correct.
Hey, anybody want to submit some articles about veterans?
Yeah. That's right.
And then about 6 months later,
Yeah, it took about 6 months to get that first issue out. Yep, that's correct. So our first issue.
Mm-hmm. July 2016. Yeah. So is there, do you have like a favorite memory from getting that first issue out, or the, you know, one of the favorite articles, or just?
Ah, that's interesting. A favorite memory from getting it out. Gosh, the whole process was really wonderful. I had enough, I guess I felt like I had enough time to do an editor's introduction. And so it was really nice to be able to frame the issue and mention all the different articles. I really liked that we had a diverse array of folks. And we also had some like individuals that like Rebecca McMenamin, who is not necessarily a scholar. She's a staff member. So that's one of the things that I'm proud about the journal, is that not necessarily all academics write and publish in the journal, that individuals will write and publish in the journal about their veteran studies, or sorry, veteran service organization or whatnot.
Yeah, there's all kinds of people doing some great work and gathering some interesting data out there, not always academics. Yeah. So basically July 2016, and then it's publishing on a schedule of about how often?
We try to put out about 3 issues a year. However, we're a little non-traditional. So I'd say probably in about 2019, we began a process called publishing on demand. We're an open access journal. We're only online. We're not print-based at all. In 2019, we started a process called publish on demand, which means we publish an article as it's ready. And we don't wait for an issue in order to push out, you know, 5 articles. The only time we will push out a single issue with multiple articles in it is when we have a special issue. Awesome. Yeah. So I'd say total, you know, we publish about 3 issues a year, and we publish well over 100 manuscripts a year.
So, and I noticed you've got now, it's over 150, closing in on 200 articles published. So that's pretty awesome, right?
Yeah, it's amazing. As for someone who thought maybe, you know, we'd have a couple issues and then we wouldn't have any more articles coming in, it's pretty amazing that sustainability and the growth.
That's great. Yeah. And hopefully, as I said, hopefully this program will get out there and a whole lot of people will be like, oh, hey, wow. You know, I know I've encountered a number of students working in the veteran studies area, basically broadly. And I've told all of them, hey, here's a place where, you know, I don't know if you haven't considered publishing your research, but you should head that way. So basically that's very helpful. So basically the idea comes in 2015. We get to now, it's been, you know, good solid 5 or 6 years. And so the journal has grown, and obviously has grown in membership, has grown in the number of articles. I mean, I think maybe to wrap up talking about the journal, do you just have like a favorite article, or just a couple of highlights of like all that? Because 150 to 200 articles is a lot. Has there been one that really kind of rocked the boat the most, or had the most responses, or just as a like a favorite of yours in terms of what it focused on?
Absolutely, yeah. So I have two.
Awesome.
The first one is a program profile, which means that it's not a traditional article in terms of research methods and data collection and you know, all of that stuff. And it is our most widely popular article or piece, rather, that you can go on our website and it shows you, you know, top or most popular articles. And it is the top. It's called Reconceptualizing the U.S. Military's Transition Assistance Program, the Success in Transition Model. And I would say that I think a lot of scholars are very interested in that transition process. How does that happen? And so this has become one of the most, it is the most popular piece. And then I'll say, I'm a little biased, but my favorite piece is called The State of Research in Veteran Studies, a Systematic Literature Review, nice. Which was published in 2020. And I love that because it's giving legitimacy to the fact that veteran studies can be an academic field.
Body of work, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So speaking of veteran studies as an academic field, excellent segue. Thank you very much. I'd like to talk a little bit about this concept because I guess if you go back to the early 2010s and you start talking to people about veteran studies, you're going to get a lot of blank looks, whether you're in academia or anyplace else. And now, you know, it's very different. Now you really have, you have a journal. There is a 501c3 that underpins the Veteran Studies Association. So you've got an association, a journal, a 501c3. You have regular sort of annual conferences where research can be presented, and there's a growth in, as we were discussing a little bit earlier, growth in actual veteran studies programs, whether it's a certificate or a minor, or now in at least one case, I think there's several that are coming online, you can get your degree. You can major in veteran studies, which I think is just fantastic. So let's talk a little bit about this whole concept of veteran studies. Maybe you can just give a little bit of your thoughts on sort of how you've seen it grow. And then we can talk a little bit about some of these great programs and associations.
Sure. So the veteran studies, it very much is about the veteran experience, quote unquote, whatever that means, you know, and it's so multifaceted, obviously. So the first time I heard the term I mentioned was Travis Martin out of Eastern Kentucky University using that term. And that was the first program I had ever heard of that was teaching any classes about veteran studies. And so, you know, I just really wanted to be a fly on the wall in that classroom to kind of understand more about what that was. And, you know, over the years, I grasped a little bit more here and there. I've seen it grow a lot. Yeah. So, you know, hearing that term maybe in 2013 really sticks out, 2012. And then meeting people at Virginia Tech, doing the work and hosting that first conference, as I mentioned, really put it into perspective to see how many people there were. I met a really great colleague there, Jim Craig, who was at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Yep. I always get it wrong. and he has a program too for veteran studies. And so, wow, seeing that, seeing another individual running a program in veteran studies was really fascinating to me. I've seen it grow in terms. Sorry, go ahead.
This is the 2013 conference, right?
So, yeah.
So, what would you say as you think back on that? Like, how many people, how many scholars? Just kind of a rough number. What kind of a group are we pulling together?
Let's be generous and say there are 100 people there.
Awesome.
Maybe. Yeah.
So I mean, a small but very focused community, right? Right off the bat, right? So it isn't just like three people at a table. This is the first conference, and there's still quite a number of people who are like, hey, yeah, this is my interest. Okay, great. So,
yeah.
And then there have been a couple more since then. Would you say that there's been some pretty steady growth?
There has been. And what's been really exciting and awesome is international growth. So we've had individuals coming over from, you know, the UK and other countries to be a part of this conversation.
For sure. And I mean, you think about it, you know, when you think about it, we've basically spent the last 20 years in sort of the longest wars in the history of our nation. And it hasn't just been us, the US, right? We've had allies with the UK and, you know, Australia and any number of allies that have participated with us. And so they obviously have their own communities and their own needs and probably doing some of their own research. So that's fantastic as well. Cool. Okay, so yeah, so I mean, maybe then talk a little bit more about sort of how it's grown or how you've seen it grow.
Sure. Yeah, so at the founding of the journal, or that when that first issue came out in 2016, I had mentioned that there were these number of programs, and I think I mentioned one is in New York State sort of system school. There was one, and then the one in EKU, the one in Missouri that I knew about. And since that time, I am aware of a program that's in Utah. I think it's a graduate level program. And I think it's more focused on the health sort of aspect of veterans healthcare, if I'm correct. And then UC Irvine has come out with a certificate program, which is a great program. They've come out with one. I know Arizona State is really, really working hard at offering classes in that regard. I don't know if they have a full certificate program or not, but I have some great colleagues there that are doing good work. And those are all the ones that I'm currently aware of. But the thing is, I think if we could talk to Jim Craig, we'd hear that he gets tapped on a lot to sort of I'm really sorry, St. Leo University. My friend Luke McLeese at St. Leo University. they're the first ones that I'm aware of that is offering a major in a four-year degree, and that's coming out this fall. But I wanted to just say, I think folks like Luke, Travis, Jim, they're being tagged to say, like, how do I establish this program? I think there are more. I think there are a lot of these conversations happening.
It's an idea that's kind of reaching critical mass, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful. And I think a lot has a lot to do with both the journal and the association. So so the Veterans Studies Association, what's that about? And why, I mean, anybody can join, right? So, I mean, what you'd like to see is anybody out there who's helping veterans or running any kind of program at any university, you know, why not join? You get more awareness of the journal. You get access to the conference, right? I mean,
yeah, that's correct. Yeah. So just really looking forward to establishing community and connection, because at least I can speak for myself, when I was when I was affiliated with a full-time with the university, I felt, you know, I was the only one doing that kind of research. I was the only person in my whole school that I knew of doing research about veterans and the veteran experience. So instead of having these little silos of individuals doing the work across the country, trying to find a way to, we have some international members, instead of having just these little silos of people doing similar work, bringing together and having conversation and helping each other out is really the goal. And then, being able to financially support a conference. The journal gets no financial support other than Virginia Tech Publishing fully takes care of all web hosting and creation of that. But, you know, no one is getting paid for the journal or with the association. Sure. All of the benefits or all the money is going to being able to host events.
Yeah, awesome. So the Veterans Studies Association, it is a 501c3, right? So it's a nonprofit. That's got a board. And then its primary thing is just to host the conference. Try to do that once a year, but there's, I know COVID obviously interrupted everything, but there's one coming up, right? You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So Arizona State University will be hosting the next Veterans and Society Conference working on the call for papers right now. We're hoping to have it in the fall, if not fall 2021, because I know all of us are still trying to be aware of the COVID situation and what's happening. If not fall 2021, then fall 2022, we will be having this conference. Again, still working on a call for papers, but Arizona State has quite a veterans and military program, and they're very proud to be able to host something of this caliber. And we're hoping that we'll have, you know, well over 200 people there. For the 2020 conference we were supposed to have in St. Louis was probably the most people in attendance, but was canceled.
Yeah, it was all set to go. Does the Veterans Studies Association ever do like a booth at like the Student Veterans of America conference? They do that each year?
No, we haven't. So, you know, you have to pay to get into those conferences. That is SBA is quite an expensive one if you're not, you know, affiliated with the university. At this point, we haven't. The journal has gone to SBA 1 year out of her own pocket. But yeah, these card sorts of, you have to pay to play. And and if you're not affiliated with the university, getting into these spaces is quite challenging.
All right.
Yeah, agreed.
When I think about large numbers of people who are very interested in veterans and veteran research, that SVA is a prime area of intellectual ferment. So, all right.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Couldn't agree more.
So I think one of the last things to talk about would be, because we've sort of done the journal and sort of the emergence of this veteran studies concept and how it's evolved and become more common, and the degree programs, the certificate programs. We've got the association and the conference. So in all this time now, decade plus, that you have been sort of drifting around in this sort of stew pot and bumping into all these other great folks, and you've mentioned several, but maybe we could just sort of spend a couple minutes kind of laying out a little bit of a who's who, because I think as everyone's listening to this, they may not be aware of where's all the cool stuff going down, right? So like if you're new to a town, you know, where's the best burger? Where's the good late night joint? Where's the best urgent care? You know, who's the best doctor and dentist? scientist, and just kind of best of, you know, thinking, for example, you know, I'll just sort of lead off and say, you know, that Syracuse has this great thing, this Institute for the Veterans and Military Family. It's extremely well funded. They've got their own building now. It's been growing year over year. They do a lot of fantastic work. And there's a bunch of others. So just from your perspective and just kind of freeform, just kind of like flip through your Rolodex and say, here's a cool thing, and here's a cool thing, and don't forget about this one over here, and she's doing this, and whatever. Just if you want to take a couple of minutes and just kind of plant some seeds so that folks could go sort of dig in a little bit and find out some more.
Well, I'd really like to start off by saying that there's a lot of great work happening outside of the United States. I know this is probably just a national broadcast show. However, got some really great colleagues doing things in the UK and Australia, I'm learning more and more about these programs, and Forces in Mind Trust is a very big organization in the United Kingdom that do amazing research for military families and veterans. So I want to give
what was that called again? Forces in Mind.
Forces in Mind Trust.
Forces in Mind Trust. Got it.
So yeah. Keep
the forces in mind.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, they have quite a robust web presence with lots of different resources. So very exciting. Coming back to the United States, however, I have a close colleague, Alexis Hart. She's at Allegheny University. So she and her colleague, Roger Thomas, who is at Stony Brook University, they were really big into establishing in the field of rhetoric and composition, or in English studies, for lack of a better word, a focus on veterans and student veterans. So they have written like sort of the seminal text on working with student veterans in the writing classroom, and have helped establish a standing group at a conference that's the biggest in the field of, again, rhetoric and composition, called the Conference on College Composition and Communication. There's a standing group where it is focused on working with current, future, and former members of the military. So this has become a robust group of folks and scholars that I was lucky to be a part of for a number of years as well. You know, then moving down to Virginia Tech, Jim Dubinsky and Bruce Pensick and Eric Hodges were the ones that formed that first Veterans and Societies conference. And all of them, most of their research does focus on veterans. Eric is no longer at Virginia Tech, but at Longwood University, and doing amazing work.
You're doing great with these names, by the way. You're way, way better than I am. This is fantastic.
So. I'm trying to map the country as well. Sure. I'm trying to geographically.
Keep on going.
Okay, so let's go down to Florida, where Luke McLeese, or Ernest McLeese, depending on the day, how he wants to be approached, he is at St. Leo University and in Florida, and helps establish this Veterans Studies major program. And he also has a podcast called Veterans and Academics that has become very popular. Mm-hmm. He and I are working on an edited collection of memoir-type chapters of individuals that made the transition from the military into higher education or academia. And so that's coming out from the University of Kentucky Press, probably in 2022 or 2023. And so really exciting work that he's doing in terms of focusing on that experience coming into the academy, what that's like for a veteran. And then we can't forget Travis Martin, who is doing amazing work at Eastern Kentucky University. And then Jim Craig at us in Missouri, doing amazing work. And everybody at Arizona State University, Nancy DeLay and Manu, are doing amazing work. Lucky to have them as colleagues. And then last but not least, I'll shout out to Anita Cervantes Bradford, who is in charge of the certificate program at the University of California, Irvine, in veteran studies. And she's doing amazing work trying to get that program robust.
Yeah. And so absolutely. Signing up for the journal or checking out the journal, what would be a good URL for them to hit up to see more about the veteran studies in terms of the journal?
It's journal-veterans-studies.org. But I do think that if you just Google Journal of Veteran Studies, it should be coming up
awesome.
There.
And then how about the Veteran Studies Association and the Associated Conference? I'm assuming the conference information would always be on the association's website, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So veteranology dot Was it org?
Org.
Veteranology.org. Yep. So there you go. Two great links if folks want to follow up some more. So I think we'll kind of wrap it up there, but I'd like to thank my guest, Mari Grochowski, so much. This has really been fantastic to learn all about the journal. Fantastic resource. So thank you again, Mari, and we'll be in touch. And have a great day, everybody. It's been my pleasure. Again, I'm Eric Fretz, your host today here on Veterans Radio, and we'll see you next time.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Lieutenant J.G. William Hall pressed the attack, although seriously wounded during the Battle of the Coral Sea. Details after this.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Hall was the pilot of a scouting plane in action against enemy Japanese forces in the Coral Sea. In a determined attack on 7th of May, 1942, Hall dove his plane at an enemy Japanese aircraft carrier, contributing materially to the destruction of that vessel. On the 8th of May, facing heavy and fierce fighter opposition, he again displayed extraordinary skill as an airman and the aggressive spirit of a fighter in repeated and effective counterattacks against the superior number of enemy planes in which three enemy aircraft were destroyed. Though seriously wounded in this engagement, Hall succeeded in landing his plane safe. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. We can all help someone going through a difficult time. Learn how you can be there for veterans. Visit VeteransCrisisLine.net. VeteransCrisisLine.net. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm your host, Dr. Eric Fretz, and we're continuing our discussion of veteran studies with our previous guest, Mari Grochowski, who has talked with us a lot about the evolution of the Journal of Veteran Studies. And as we were talking, she mentioned all of her fantastic colleagues who contribute to this field. And I said, you know, let's just get a bunch of them together and we'll continue this discussion. So we're joined, in addition to Mari, by our three colleagues. We have Bruce Pensek and Eric Hodges and Travis Martin, who are all part of the group of scholars who are contributing to the veteran studies veteranology concept. So I think we would talk a little bit more today about how that concept has evolved. Let me go ahead and bring them up once at a time. So Bruce, you're a co-founder of the Veterans and Society Initiative at Virginia Tech and one of the history and social sciences librarian there. So you've been involved in this a long time and some of the really foundational things. You want to talk a little bit about your program and how this started for you?
Well, yes, thank you. Yes, and Eric Hodges, who's also here with us, the three of us, Jim Dubinsky in the English department, me in the library, and Eric in an interdisciplinary social sciences PhD program, we'd worked together with Eric and his PhD, and he was interested in civic engagement of veterans. I know some of that literature in my previous life, was a political science professor. And we started looking at, we just sort of gelled together with this idea of thinking systematically about veterans. I was familiar with the term, putting on my history librarian hat, from literature about the American Civil War. As a political scientist who used to look at questions in the history of political thought, I also had some knowledge of the classical literature that provides an interesting backstory. This is before I'd come across Jonathan Shay's work. And so I hope I'm not going to embarrass Eric too much here, but we created the Veterans and Society Conference, originally called the Veterans Studies Conference. Originally supposed to run in 2012, and there's some scheduling problems then. So the first one was in 2013. So we've been talking about this for a long time. And at that point, because veteran studies had not gelled as a term, we were looking for a very broad conference and just sort of see who was interested and what kind of networks we could create. The idea has evolved, and I think we'll come back to this later, in terms of disciplinary lines, historical depth, and something I'm particularly interested in is the internationalization of veteran studies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hopefully we're going to have a follow-on. Just for those of you listening, we're going to have a follow-on episode where we're going to bring in some interesting folks who are looking at this on an international basis, even over in the UK and other areas. So, yeah, that's helpful. I mean, there's been so much over the years. If you go back, you can find, I'm sure, discussions about veterans' issues that show up in like military history, or maybe mm-hmm. here and there in counseling or clinical psychology, or in the social work, things like that. And yet they're existing in these individual pockets of like an interest area within a larger discipline, and now they're being sort of organized within their own. Excellent. So thanks for that, Bruce. And then next, Eric, you were just mentioned, obviously, as a key player in this adventure. You want to talk a little bit about your background and experiences in terms of veteran studies and just where you're at now?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me on the show. So for me, my involvement really began after my transition from the military back into civilian life. I served in the Marine Corps in the early 2000s. And when I got out, I had a bit of a difficult transition getting out. You know, it was very culturally disorienting for me going from a military background into, you know, an institution of higher education. So anyway, I was able to make the transition and ended up working in DC for a while. And then I decided I wanted to pursue a PhD. So I went to graduate school at Virginia Tech. And it was around that time is when sort of a lot of veterans were coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan, and you know, PTSD rates were skyrocketing and veteran suicide numbers were climbing. And I was still in the process of trying to figure out what I wanted to write my dissertation on. So I became involved with efforts on Virginia Tech's campus to help veterans reintegrate into the campus. And I thought, well, you know, why don't I just do my doctoral research on veterans issues and ways to help veterans transition back into society. Because my degree was primarily in political science, I was interested in civic engagement. So, and I had read a report saying that veterans exhibit higher rates of civic engagement than civilians. So I thought maybe this is a way to help bridge the gap. You know, is this notion of serving in the community, you know, continuing the sense of service that you have while you're in the military, continuing that when you get out, kind of serves as a bridge into the community. So I started pursuing that research, and that's when I ran into Bruce and Jim, who were both on my dissertation committee. I started getting into the literature, and I noticed there wasn't a lot out there at that time. So I thought, you know, what can we do as a group to try to move forward the state of research regarding veterans? So I talked to Bruce, I talked to Jim. We decided to put on the Veterans in Society Conference to try to bring scholars together who were interested in veterans issues. And it kind of just took off from there. And I know we can talk more about some of the efforts that have happened since that point.
Excellent. Excellent. So just, you know, as we, a number of us here have our PhDs, we do the sort of the inside questions. What's the really unusual thing that you found in your PhD journey that you didn't expect? Right? What's the little hidden gem from your dissertation?
Well, you know, it's interesting. So I was in the Marines, and I was never expecting to go back to Paris Island or do research regarding Marine Corps boot camp for my PhD. But I actually ended up going back to Marine Corps boot camp to see if it was developing civic skills and civic values that would help veterans engage in their communities when they got out. And I found out that, in fact, Marine Corps boot camp is all about civic value development through narrative storytelling and moral exemplars and things like that. And, you know, I went through it, but I hadn't really processed it at the time.
Sure.
It was interesting to look at it. Yeah, to look at it from that different perspective. So.
For sure. Well, that's very interesting to me. Yes, actually. And in my experience, I've worked with so many different groups of veterans in different roles. And I will say the one thing I'm willing to defend is that despite their smaller number, Marines have been a disproportionate, probably two or three times greater than their statistical presence would allow for in terms of leadership and stepping up to these roles. The Marine boot camp is definitely doing something.
I'll try to hold back my Marine Corps hoorah pride right now.
There you go. Last but not least, Travis Martin, who's the director of the Kentucky Center for Veterans Studies. And so maybe share a little bit about sort of how you've come to be in the role that you're in and how you viewed the evolution of the Veterans Studies term.
Well, like Eric, I was a service member. I served in the Army from 02 to 06 with deployments to Iraq in 03 and 05. And when I got back, I also dealt with some issues with readjustment. And for me, I got into the study of literature and writing as a way to kind of work through that. Mm-hmm. And just kind of, you know, looking at the historical narrative and the literary works of veterans who had written before me, especially the works of like the great war poets and people like that, how they formed community and kind of processed those experiences collectively led me to, you know, develop teaching styles around expressivist pedagogy. And I eventually, as my first teaching experience, was tasked with designing an orientation course just for vets here at Eastern Kentucky University. This was back in 2010. And the students invariably tended to focus upon the hardships that they went through, the traumas, even though that wasn't something that was explicitly asked for in the prompt. So I found that there was a need for that. As I continued to get into my own work, I started to consider myself something like a 20th century American war literature scholar. And that's what I ended up doing my PhD in. And September 15, 2010, I just found these notes the other day when I was in my student account. We had our first meeting to talk about a veteran studies academic program here at EKU. And so for me, it was just like, I went up to my boss at the time, I'm still a grad student. And I said, Brett, I see all these other programs. We have Appalachian studies, gender studies, Irish studies, Jewish studies, but we don't have anything called veteran studies. And why not? And he was just like, I don't even know what your job is, Travis, just go for it. You just find your own way. And you know, that's what you usually do. And so
the bias for action. Yes.
Yeah. So here I am, first semester teacher, former Army sergeant, sitting in with provosts and deans and curriculum councils, like filling out all those meticulous forms and getting the program approved. And we had our first classes in 2011. It wasn't long after that that I got invited to the Veterans and Society Conference to speak. And that's where I met Bruce and James and Eric and Mariana. And Mariana and I actually worked together in another organization called Military Experience in the Arts for a few years. When I left Eastern, started the nonprofit to kind of focus in on that opportunity to provide veterans a space where they could tell stories. We also extended that to non-vets and people in the larger community. And we provided everything for free. Workshops, and we had two national symposia with a couple of hundred people each, and no veteran ever or family member ever paid anything for it. We published something like 500 works and 8 edited collections while I was there, and it's still being run by a guy named David Irvin today. He's also an Army vet. So I went on, I had to take a break from it for a bit. Getting a PhD is hard, as you can imagine, as we all know, actually. So I also started studying social theory up at University of Kentucky. So I got a graduate certificate in that, along with my literary studies, and wrote my dissertation on what was called A Theory of Veteran Identity. And I guess the odd thing that I found was that my theory of veteran identity tended to have more to do with non-veterans than it did with vets. Hmm. The more and more I thought about it, it was the issues that veterans were struggling with in terms of self-perception, in terms of finding place in community, had to do with the communities they were returning to, and just the inability and sometimes the flat out unwillingness to listen to veterans or give them a space to share, to tell, to be engaged. And I think a lot of that's just ingrained in our society as a way to avoid discomfort with, you know, the complexities and the hardships of war. But I won't belabor anyone with that dissertation talk that can get really pedantic. So that's kind of me. And now I'm back at EKU. I direct our Kentucky Center for Veteran Studies, which is basically an expansion of our academic program to include outreach for our service region, basically providing our students with service learning opportunities, putting them to work in the community to help vets as a way to prepare them for the workforce. A lot of our students. Yeah, psychology, social work, nurses, police studies majors, people like that are tending to flock to the program because they'll end up serving vets. There's 18 million of us. That's the hope anyway, we can make them better at it.
That's great. And that service also has that side benefit of sort of being both prophylactic and restorative in terms of the individual's mental health, right? So, I mean, helping others.
Absolutely.
We've all, I think most of me, I remember very profoundly, I really, getting my mind right after my last deployment to Iraq really only came about because I started getting so involved in helping other veterans, and helping them out of their difficulties was instrumental for me. And so I think I'm a big believer in that. Awesome. Well, thank you for those introductions, gentlemen. And so I'm glad to have you here along with Mariana. And I think, you know, we'd like to shift now and just talk a little bit. You've each sort of mentioned it in your discussions here and there. You know, if we had to say, where did do we acknowledge in the field who's the first user of the term veteran studies? I think someone did coin the veteranology, right? And, you know, where did you first bump into it? And sort of where do you see it? So how have you seen it evolve, basically? So
I think some of the interesting question here really turns around what we mean by the studies part. The term has, and Travis had alluded to this, and I think we've all seen this in different forms, where, yes, there were various groups defined demographically or by senses of identity, and studies was attached to them with a certain social theory attribute tied in with critical theory, and that stream of social theory a lot going back to Foucault and folks like that. I'm not sure that is the historical usage, for example, for a lot of the folks who are looking at the American Civil War, which is how we've done that. My own approach is to try to think of studies as a more neutral term, because there's so many different kinds of experiences. Travis has already given an introduction without, I think, intending to, as to why here at Tech we called it veterans in society, is that it is working from both sides. There's so many different methods, stances, premises, disciplines for looking at both sides of that connection, that I've always approached the idea of studies as just a more descriptive term without any one particular stance. I'm very concerned about an orthodoxy developing that might exclude people.
Sure.
When the whole question of which we used most of us in this group, we tried to get Travis, but he was dissertating at the time. When we did a National Endowment for the Humanities Summer Institute 5 years ago, the two key questions were, what does it mean to be a veteran, and who counts as a veteran? Mm-hmm. And again, both those things have to do with the subjective perception or identity, as well as perceptions that may be ascribed or just sort of floating in the air. So we want to be our approach is always to be to try to be very inclusive. Mm-hmm. As to who can participate in the discussion. Another point that Travis had mentioned too, that's been a goal here, Mariana's talked about it as well, is our goal here is to promote open scholarship, open access. So the proceedings of our conferences have been on the Virginia Tech Institutional Repository for anybody in the world to see. The journal that way, and we think it's an appropriate part to make these different interpretations that give so much more nuance.
Mm-hmm. Eric, for me, when I was initially thinking about, you know, bringing veteran scholars together, it was about sort of addressing a deficiency that I saw in our society, a lack of understanding between the rest of the community that Travis was talking about and the veteran population, because the veteran numbers, as we know, since Vietnam, right, and since the draft ended, the percentage of the American population that's been serving in the military has been, you know, rapidly declining to now, you know, less than 1% or 0.5%.
Yeah, indeed.
So, you know, in my mind, that created this disconnect between the vast majority of Americans and what veterans were experiencing when they came back. And was there a way that we could, even if, you know, the vast majority of society is not going to have that military experience, was there something that we could do to try to provide information, you know, talk to the rest of society about the experiences that shape the military and the veteran experience, with the hopes that having that knowledge or that experience could help veterans, you know, and the communities make that transition when they came back.
Sure. So I mean, that was collections of writings and things like that, so people could understand the stories of those who were there in the early days of the push through Iraq or whatever, and maybe personalize that for individuals who maybe have no inkling of what military experience is. Yeah, because we've all had that experience of, you know, oh, you were in the military, you know, how many people did you kill? You know, it's just like, right, you know, this isn't what the military is really about, but they have their, you know, they have their sort of Call of Duty view of how it all works. Yeah. And definitely. Yeah. And so I think back to this idea of the different areas that we draw from, you know, would you say, I mean, obviously there's going to be a lot of sort of what we see here is veterans who came back, who got their PhD, who wanted to focus on these issues for their personal experiences and experiences of others that were near them. Do we find that there are individuals, and Mari can maybe chime in a little bit, folks who are submitting to the journal, who, you know, do we get folks from social work, from psychology, or what sort of scholars are contributing, and what sort of other areas are contributing into the veteran studies world?
All the fields. It's an all interdisciplinary, which is great. And it's also, it's not a fault. It's not a fault. It's wonderful to see all of the different voices coming in. There have only been a few people though that have been willing to theorize and bring up the topic in a comprehensive way and as a way to study it directly. And those fields are more like political science, sociology, those sorts of kinds of disciplines that have ventured to kind of bring a look at veteran studies. Health sciences is probably one of the larger ones, but I don't think that they think about it in quite the same way that we're talking about here.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, imagine that because this is sort of this amalgam or this melting pot with these differing disciplines coming in, and each of them have their own ways, their own epistemology, their own ways of knowing, their own rules of sort of what counts for, you know, good research and standards and methods and all of that. Yeah. It must be quite an adventure to sort of ride herd on all of those differing assumptions, everybody coming in. But I think it does end up, you know, I mean, obviously you have to do that hard work of you know, learning these different approaches. So I think it's great that it's being done.
Bruce alluded to Jonathan Shea earlier. People, you know, he wrote Achilles in Vietnam and Odysseus in America. He talks a lot about Homer, who was writing about veterans in like 700 BC. The Christian Bible writes about veterans and prescribes mm-hmm. ways of letting them return and just ways to do with war. Just war theory, I think itself goes way back and before recorded history. The Veterans of Society Conference, that, you know, they talked about Willard Waller and his veteranology. I mean, that was probably the closest thing that, you know, I had seen to like a, you know, an attempt to bring together various perspectives. It was very focused on problematics and specific issues that maybe not would be applicable to like a diffuse theory of veteran identity. But, you know, I would say that the Red Badge of Courage, even Stephen Crane, was like a very good way of looking at veteran identity. I mean, he is
to process those experiences,
a wound, and using it to justify his identity as a veteran. Mm-hmm. So if one of us were the first one to use the phrase veteran studies, I would say that's probably less important than the fact that people have been writing about it for centuries. And we are a community, a very close knit and sharing community, I'll add, coming together to be an inclusive place for people to kind of bring these interdisciplinary perspectives together. Like some of our colleagues who weren't here, Jim Craig and I, were working together in 2010, 2011 on our respective curriculum. Yeah. Ernest Luke McLeese, he worked here at EKU. Now he started the first bachelor's level program. Mm-hmm. Mariana and I.
Yeah.
And we've all, and like I said, I was at the Veterans of Society Conference. We've all been sharing with each other, and we've all been welcoming in more and more voices. And one thing else I'll add too is it's not just veterans. And Mariana is just one example of that. You know, if you're going to have an idea, if you're going to have a theory, you're going to have, you know, a discipline, you can't just have veterans being the only people capable of teaching it. The ideas have to stand on their own. And I think most of us see that. And Bruce, I think you're an example too.
Yes, yes. I wanted to jump in there to clarify any misunderstandings. Yeah, I got into this as the clueless civilian by noting the contrast among three members of my family and a dear friend who all served during the Vietnam War in the American military had very different experiences mm-hmm. from ones in which ranging from one person who didn't get start collecting his VA benefits until he was reaching retirement age. It was not a central part of his identity, so far as I could tell, but it was certainly led to his to a career path. Another was very traumatized by his experiences and is still struggling after 50 years of being back. And that kind of uncertainty is part of my motivation to say this whole question of how do we unpack these simple stereotypes about veterans, so much tied to our veterans, i.e. our own country's veterans of whatever war. We don't pay as much attention to peacetime veterans. And it seems to me the veteran studies through this sense of, yes, veterans in society as opposed to veterans and society, which there's a built-in binary. And there is a section in Ergomas, the European Military Sociology Association, that we've loosely coordinated with over the years. Their section is veterans and society. And I think, again, that applies a different stance as to how we look as scholars, but again, as Travis and Eric both mentioned, also the insider, outsider, how do we juxtapose those things to everybody's benefit?
Yeah. Well, I think those are great comments to wrap up this section. So I did want to say thanks for that. It's definitely been super interesting. I'd like to thank Travis for his comments as well as wrapping things up. And so we're going to get some you guys hopefully back and your colleagues together for another episode where we're going to talk about all the amazing programs that you're doing. So again, I want to thank you again very much, Travis, Bruce, Eric, and Mari, for being on this second half of this first episode. And we're going to get you back and continue to. So for those of you who are listening, if you want to hear more about these amazing programs that are being developed all across the nation, just catch us on our next episode. Thanks very much. I'm your host, Dr. Eric Fretz, and this is Veterans Radio.
Hi, this is Dale Thronberry again. Thank you very much for listening to our program today, and I really want to thank Dr. Fretz and his guests for talking all about the veteran studies programs that are going on around the country and around the world. Dr. Fretz will be back, as he mentioned, continuing with this story about veteran studies. But I wanted to remind everybody that next week is our Gifts for Veterans program. So tune in and find out, you know, if you're going to be able to find something for that veteran in your house, this is the place to find it. So tune in next week. And until then, this is Dale Thronberry, and you are dismissed.